The following podcast is from the weekly message at Summit Church in Upstate South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Well, good morning, Summit Church. How are you guys doing? It's good to be here. Oh, thanks for those cheers. My name is Josh Peterson, and I'm a dude at the church, but they let me preach sometimes. And so it's good to be here with you this morning. It's good to teach. I'm excited to share some of what the Lord has been teaching me in this process. So if we get a chance, I would encourage you guys, pray for Kyle, you know, our normal campus pastor here, just being ill and fighting whatever, COVID, fighting the pandemic and this deal. But he's on the mend, but he's felt really, really crummy this week. You know, so I check in with him for a couple days, didn't hear anything back, and I thought, oh, man. He got bit, man. The vid got him, dude. That's it, you know. But no, he's fighting strong. He's coming out the other side. And I know that he misses being here with us. I know that because he told me that. So just if you get a chance, pray for him, pray for his family. You know, they've been beat up by this a few times over the past year and a half, his family getting it and him getting it. And so, man, I miss him. But I am excited to be here and teach. I was scheduled to teach no matter what. And so while it's a wild thing, the Lord knew that Kyle would be sick. Wasn't a surprise to Kyle, or to the Lord. Was a surprise to Kyle, but not to the Lord. So, but man, I'm here, and I get to talk to you guys a little bit about the church as a family, right? And, you know, as I thought about the assignment of the different ways that we speak about the people of God, and the way that we speak about the church, both the church in a small c, right, like this US Summit Church or Grace Church or Fellowship Greenville, I almost call it Southside. That's how old. Yeah. Fellowship Greenville, like all these different manifestations, those are small C churches. So we have the church, and then we have the big C church, God's people, all of us, all of God's people, past, present, and those that he will call to himself in the future. And the way that there's imagery in the scriptures that teach us about what it looks like to be a part of both of those churches. There's things that we learn, and there's ways that how we live our lives are shaped by the way that God's word describes us as his people. And so today we're going to look at the family of God. What does that mean, the family of God? Why would God choose that? What is significant about that idea? And that's kind of what we're going to look at. We're going to hop around a little bit today. If you want to make a note on your note card or in your journal, some of the passages we'll look at is John 1, 12 and 13. We'll be in Romans 8, 12 through 17. And we'll be in 1 Timothy, a couple verses in 1 Timothy. And so if you want to sort of flip to those in your Bible, put your finger in those areas, as we work through the sermon, those are sort of the passages we're going to camp out at and look at. So, but before we start that, I do want to pray for our time together. And as we sat here and sang that song, as Krista and the worship band led us in that song, I was struck particularly by that idea of being a slave to something. And this is freebie. This is extra credit. It's not typed here on these notes. Kip, there's only 3 pages of notes. It's less than normal. So, and Krista showed me where the clock was this morning. So, thank you. I see the clock. It looks like blurry blue things. I think I have to get those reader glasses that other men my age have. I've fought it for so long, but I think it says 9:22. All right. But I thought about that, like the way that we become enslaved to things, and it is not lost on me or our church or our leadership or community group leaders that. There are ways where we come in on any given Sunday morning, we come in enslaved by different things. Fear of provision, fear of relationships breaking. We come with tension. We feel enslaved. Some of us may come feeling enslaved by addictions or enslaved by substances or enslaved by our boss at work. I have a good friend who owns a handful of companies, and it's so funny to me because from the outside looking in, he would seem to be somebody that is just super successful. And he is in so many different realms very successful. But every time we hang out, he looks at me and he says, I have golden handcuffs, Josh. He's like, I feel enslaved and trapped by my success and my responsibilities and by this life that I've built. You know, it's so weird. You would think, for me, I'm like, how can you feel trapped by, like, so many good things. But the reality is for him, he's trapped in part by his stuff. His lake house and his mountain house and his boat and his multiple cars and his companies. And he's like, oh, you must have it so easy, Josh, because, you know, like you can just kind of enjoy life and you don't have all this stuff on you and you don't have all this stuff breaking. And I'm thinking, well, you must have it easy. You know, you're successful and people look up to you and you have all these resources. And so even some of the people that we might think they do not at all feel trapped or enslaved. Guess what? They wrestle with those same things. And this has nothing to do with family. This has nothing to do with the sermon. But I just wanted to say to you as a church that the truth of those words, that may be all you need to hear this morning. You know, for some of you, you just might need to come face to face with the idea that your relationship in the Lord, who the Lord has made you, what he has called you into, is a freedom in him that allows you to say, I'm not a slave to that anymore. And sometimes it helps to say it out loud. I won't make everybody say their things out loud. Maybe I should if I was really like brave or spiritual. I don't know. But sometimes it helps, you know, to say like, hey, I'm no longer a slave to my boss. I'm no longer a slave to the fear of failure. I'm no longer a slave to living with a scarcity mindset that the enemy tells me your father doesn't love you. There's not enough for you. He's not going to provide for you, and he just wants to squash you. I'm not a slave to this alcohol. I'm not a slave to this substance that I abuse. I am not a slave to these unhealthy, codependent relationships. I'm no longer a slave to pornography. I'm no longer a slave to my addictions. I'm no longer a slave to seeking to perform and having my entire identity wrapped so much up in this letter that gets written at the top of a piece of paper by my professor or my teacher or my grad school professor or whatever it is. I mean, there's so many things that can enslave us. And I just thought, man, Lord, what a powerful thing to be able to say, I'm not a slave to that. And sometimes we don't feel that, but the journey to experiencing it more often than not is a willingness to embrace it and say it, right? To allow yourself to think it. Like, I'm going to allow myself to think today that I am not a slave to the fear of failure. I'm not going to be crippled by it anymore. I'm not a slave to my depression. I'm not a slave to my anxiety disorder. You know, I am not wholly defined by these things that seem to put their hooks in me and trap me. And so, man, this morning, if you came and you feel trapped and you feel enslaved, you don't need to listen to me talk about the church. I just would love for you to steep in this idea. And I trust the Spirit's going to speak to you. Listen for the whisper of the Father as he tells you strongly in your ear, guess what? You're mine. And when you're mine, you're not a slave to these other empty things. All right, let's talk about family of God. So I can remember when I moved from Wisconsin. Wisconsin is, it's the frozen tundra of the United States. We are technically the Midwest. When I first moved to Greenville, I said, hey, I'm from Wisconsin. And people would be like, well, you're a Northerner, you're a Yankee. They call me a Yankee. I said, well, technically I'm not a Yankee. I'm a Midwesterner, okay? Give me a little bit of a break. You know, we're kind of like Switzerland in the whole battle, you know? We're like, I'm West enough that, you know, I'm kind of there in the middle. Like, oh, you're still a Yankee. And I realized that in South Carolina, more often than not, if you're from like north of North Carolina, you're just a Yankee. That's it. There's like Southerners and then Yankees. It's the rest of the United States. So, but when I moved from Wisconsin, I can remember the first time someone called me Brother Josh. Hey, Brother Josh. I'm like, Brother Josh, what is this? What's going on here? I went to a Southern Baptist undergraduate school. I did my bachelor's degree at a Southern Baptist university in Palm Beach. And I got there and everybody was brother this, sister that, Brother Josh. And I thought, this is kind of weird. I guess, is that like a title, you know, or is it like official? And so that was my first entry into this idea of like familial language right there. You know, I'd read it in the scriptures, but it was weird for me because it wasn't my culture up north, up Midwest, north of here, geographically speaking, cardinal directions. But it wasn't part of life to be called Brother Josh, sister this, you know, sister Olivia, tell me this. And so I was like, yeah, it's kind of odd, you know, it's a cultural thing. And I started to study church history. And one of the fascinating things about church history is that this sort of language actually got the church in trouble oftentimes. And I don't know if you guys know this, but There was a point in during the Roman Empire, Christians were not very popular at the time. They're getting their butts kicked. People didn't like them. And then they had some bad habits. They had a little bit of a PR problem. Two things. One, they would call each other brother and sister. That's fine until you see them get married. Like, hey, this is my sister. Oh, sister this, brother that. And then like they got married like 2 months later, 4 months later. And then the outsiders outside the community are like, whoa, what's up with that, man? I thought he said there was a sister. And they're like, yeah, I guess they marry their sisters. And so literally we have letters from generals and Roman observers on the outside looking in, writing to other people out, you know, during this time frame going, well, these Christians are kind of an odd bunch. They're incestuous at first. They're marrying their sisters and brothers, right? And then they would call communion a love feast, just so you guys know. And so, and then they didn't let anybody on the outside watch communion because it was reserved solely for the people of God. And there's some truth in that. But the exclusivity about taking communion with one another, and then the name of it as a love feast, right? And then we talk about drinking the blood of Christ and eating his flesh. And they would go into the love feast with their brothers and sisters, and nobody else was able to observe. And so they were like, these Christians are cannibals. They drink blood and eat flesh. Literally, they said this. They are incestuous. They marry their brothers and sisters. And they have these big love feast parties with each other and their brothers and sisters. All right, so the language of the family of God in the past has been a little bit problematic for the people of God. We're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, she's my sister, but not my sister that way, right? That's what, this brother Josh, but not brother the way that you're thinking, brother. And as a byproduct of that, I think that over time, this language, it is true biblical language, the church has had to go, okay, exactly what does this mean? And so I'll probably get in trouble, but the first question is to ask you guys, are we supposed to think of the family of God as a metaphor, or is it actually literal? Does Jesus say, I'm going to treat you like a brother? Or does it say in Hebrews 2 that Jesus is not ashamed to call us brothers and sisters? Does God say, you are like my sons and daughters? Or does God say, no, you are my son, you are my daughter? Right, a metaphor is when we use something to describe this likeness, right? It's just like, okay, how am I going to describe this thing? I'm going to use this imagery over here. I'm going to speak metaphorically, and it's going to help shape what's happening here in reality. But my question is, are we supposed to see the family of God as a metaphor, simply a concept that we can kind of think about? Or do the scriptures actually paint a picture where God says, you are my son, you are my daughter, you are brothers and sisters, your origin, the origin of your life is coming from the same place. And so in the same way your biological brother or sister has their origin in the same womb, right? With the same parents, if we dial that back, if we turn the page, like if we zoom out one other layer, the layer behind that biological mother and father is that there is actually a common source of life and is coming to life in Christ, right? Being called into the family of God means that you share the same source of life. Your genesis is coming from the same place. So Paul and I have, and so we're not like brothers, we're brothers. Like, it's not like, oh, we're kind of like that. It's a challenging question. There's an author, her name is Dottie Lewis, and she says, she writes plainly in a book, she says, listen, family is not metaphorical. It is a literal description of the phenomenon that we experience as church. I would say, I think she's right. I think that what God has offered and what he is doing and what he is extending to us as his people, not just his people at Summit Small C, but his people globally, his people, you know, the people of God in this city, all the different Small C churches that we go to, right? I made a new friend last week. His name's Mark Ells. He came to hang out. He's here hanging out with us at church this morning. He's going to participate in worship at the church with his family that he normally goes to. We're all part of the church in Greenville, right? We're family. I didn't know that part of my family until I got a chance to spend time on a trip with him, right? But like we're family. It doesn't matter if he worships here, he worships over there. And there's things that we do as Summit, but there's also things where we're like, hey, we're the people of God. We're connected, whether we like it or not, right? And so think about that. What if every time a pastor went out to plant a church, you looked at him and you said, you're not starting a 501c3. You're not building an organization. You're starting a family. What? I'm not interested in that. Like, I thought, you know, I'm going to start a ministry. I'll fill out the paperwork. Like, it's going to be this thing. Like, no. This is, you're starting a family. it has a different feel to it, right? You're a visitor. I mean, holy cow, there's a bunch, you guys are college students up here? Yeah. You're like, do you guys know, you like came in force. This is how I knew we were visiting. First, one, you're here like 8:30. I'm like, dude, ain't nobody that normally comes here at 8:30. And you all came in like a whole train of college students, like, doo-doo, like just one after the other, right? You come to a new church and you're like, hey, I never met these people before. Yeah, but like what you're entering into is a family. It's probably part of what you want. Hey, I moved into the school. I don't know anybody. I'm in this new chapter of my life. And it's important for me that I have these familial elements around me. I'm going to go be a part of a local church. Hopefully what you find here is family, right? You don't want to come here just, it's not like, oh, we don't have any chance to sing some worship songs or, you know, read a Bible sermon once in a while. Jeez Louise, you can download a million Bible sermons, play a million, well, you know, Spotify, a million. I was almost said play a million CDs. I'm like, oh, what is a CD? You can Spotify worship music all over the place. That's good. And what we do here is good. That's part of what we do. But ultimately, part of what the local church we would hope would provide for somebody who's coming in that way is like, hey, there's a family here. There's people here. They care about me. So I want to challenge you to think about the family of God. That's not a metaphor. That's actually what the phenomenon is. So we'll probably get in trouble if we're like, our sermon series is a metaphor of the church. And then we're like, and we let Josh go up there and he said this is not a metaphor. Don't worry, that's all right. I'll take the hit. Here's another reason I don't think it was a metaphor, because it's a tremendously risky thing to pick if you're just picking it as a metaphor. Because here's the other truth. Some of you have family situations that suck. You didn't grow up in a great family. You don't get excited when you hear the word family. Some of you do. Some of you might feel a little guilty. Oh, you know, like, should I feel embarrassed that I really actually loved my family and I had a great upbringing? Some of you can go, Josh, it would take me days to tell you all the things that are broken about the family unit I came from. And some of you would say, if I had a week, I couldn't tell you all the good things about my family unit. And then there's a lot of us that are in between. You all know the good stuff about your family, and you know stuff about your family that stinks. You're like, this stinks. I got wounds. You know, some of us are like, dude, I was never good enough for my mom. I had a student last year at Box, and he looked at me, he goes, I've never once heard my parents ever say that they were proud of me. And anytime that I shared anything with my parent, this particular mom, anytime I shared anything with my mom looked at me and said, I could have done that better. I couldn't fathom. He's sitting at my kitchen table hanging out with my family, and we're talking about what it was like growing up and just having some lighthearted conversation. And when it was his turn to share, like, this is what he launches at the table. Some of you are like, dude, I don't know why you picked family, Lord, as a way to describe this phenomenon. Because if I walk in here, what I'm hoping is I find something not like my biological family. Some of you are very happy that the way that this functions is not like your biological family unit functions, because you've come from just tremendous dysfunction and hurt and wounds. So I don't think that, my hunch is the reason that God speaks that way is because it's actually what he's doing, and he's willing to take that risky step, knowing that if it was just a metaphor, he probably could have picked a million different things if he was just trying to sort of casually come up with a word picture or a concept to describe something else over here that wasn't as loaded. But I want to tell you one other thing. I think we all know what it is that we long for. All of us have a picture in our mind of what a full, healthy, functioning family would look like. And there's some subtle differences, don't get me wrong, but it's weird because it's like God has implanted into us a deep longing for family. He has. How do I know that? Well, over the last 20 years of pastoral ministry and teaching, I cannot tell you how many times I've sat across from a young man or a young woman, and they've told me about how crazy their upbringing is, and they have a parent, a mom or a dad, that has just been a total knucklehead to them. And then they weep tears and go, but I still love my dad. I still love my mom. And you're like, yeah, well, I understand that. And they're like, no. I still want my dad someday to say he's proud of me. I'm like, your dad beat you. He abandoned you. He told you he hates you. And he doesn't want anything to do with you. But there's still something buried deep inside you that longs to hear him say to you, you don't even like who that person is. You don't want your life to look like that person. And yet you still long for his approval. There's something mysteriously planted in us that is hungry for the experience of family. And sometimes we have opportunities where that's met by this biological piece. And there are times where God says, hey, don't worry, because those hungers, if they have not been met by this biological element over here, they're met by a different, they can be met by a different element. And that is my people. That's what you're called into. That's what I'm bringing you into. So we all know what we long for. We all have a deep sense of what we need. We know what we desire. Let me tell you why. This is why the deepest relationships, even beyond friendship, they're reframed in familiar terms. Familial terms, excuse me. I love him like a brother. He's like a brother to me. She's like a sister to me. Well, why do you say that? You're trying to go, like, the depth of this relationship has increased substance. We are not only friends. It's like we're brothers. It's like we're sisters. Close friends of the family. That's Uncle Travis. That's Auntie Janelle. Is that whose sister is that? Whose brother is that? Well, they're just friends of mom and dad, but they're so close and it's so intimate and so powerful. That's why we call it, that's Uncle Travis, that's Auntie Janelle, right? So let me tell you about what we can learn about how the church should work from a family. First of all, guess what? You don't pick your family. Remember that one? You don't pick your family. Everybody knows that's beyond your control. You might have a say in how you participate, but you have no say in when or to whom you're birthed. That's what's so kind of wild, right? The Lord's like, hey, you might think you picked yourself into this, but I'm actually more in control of navigating and placing you than you realize. If you're a parent, met some new parents. I see some babies in the room. That's awesome. I love little babies. They're fantastic. If I'm ever preaching, I don't care if babies cry. I just think they're cool. And so you can have them in here and do not worry if they're like, make some noise. No sweat. Pastor Josh can roll with it. I think it's fantastic, all right? But the Lord, let me tell you this, the Lord entrusted you with that baby, you, right now, in 2021. That baby wasn't born in 1990, wasn't born in 1860, wasn't born in 200 BC. That baby wasn't born to Josh and Olivia. That baby wasn't born to Kyle and Jamie. That baby wasn't born to, anybody else. It's born to you. The Lord said, you are the parents that I will entrust this life to. And this life is born at this time, in this place. That baby is born in this city to you, in this time and space. And the Lord's like, that's part of what I'm working. And you are uniquely entrusted, right? Caitlin's got a little one on the way. Hope that's all right to say. All right, good. If not, I'm in big trouble. One time I was at this hotel, and we were checking in for a church event. This is when I was pastoring in Florida. We're checking in church event. Hey, we got these hotel rooms. And then my pastor buddy, Isaac, looks at this lady behind the counter and he goes, hey, what do you do? And I was like, oh crap, that woman is fully not pregnant and I cannot believe you just said that. Like I was frozen, so petrified. She started yelling and swearing at him so much. I was like, oh, it was super uncomfortable, right? So you never want to imply someone's pregnant unless you're positive. But so Caitlin's got a new baby on the way. That baby's coming exactly when the Lord wants that baby to come. And that baby says, you guys, that life that the Lord is knitting together, read Psalm 139, you've knit me together in my mother's womb. My inmost parts were not hidden from you as you were putting me together in the mysterious and secret place. Your little girl actually has some type of existence per Psalm 139, even before she goes public and comes to you as your little girl. God's been loving her and knitting her together, right? How crazy is that? And so guess what? God is calling you and bringing you to a church. He's calling you and bringing you into his people. It's not by chance. I became a Christian when I became a Christian. Guess what? God drew you to himself when he drew you to himself. Some of you are like, man, I became a Christian later in life. I have so many regrets for my life before. I would say, I understand that. You don't revel in your old life. But God knew when it was the right time to bring you from death to life. He knew when this was the right time to open your eyes. He's guided you to this place. And I know what Kip means when he says, hey, there's a lot of great churches in this town, but you could pick anyone to go to that you want to go to. But allow me to rephrase it. I don't think it's quite that haphazard. I think that God has you here this moment in this place for a particular reason. Doesn't mean you have to call this your church home. It doesn't mean that you will forever come here. It doesn't mean that we're the best fit for you. It doesn't mean that you're not going to graduate and move to a different city. But the fact of the matter is in this, if we are really a family, and if we don't have a chance to sort of pick and steer our biological family element, then maybe we're not as in control of where we are a part of God's people as we like to think we are. It's not a consumeristic, let me pick a place, and what if God is actually going, no, these are the people that I want you to be a part of. That's why I gave you to these people. And then the church takes the responsibility. Imagine a parent with a new child, and you're like, oh, well, whatever, you know. The worst, the most maniacal, just the worst example of a parent would be a parent with a brand new baby, and they're just like, whatever, and they just leave the baby. It'd be horrible. Right? It's mean. It's monster-like. Like, no, this baby's been entrusted to us. We're going to care about it. That's what family does, right? And so one of the crazy things about family, first off, is like to be brought into the people of God, we might like to think that it's a lot about us picking or us being in charge or us consumeristically driving it, but there are actually a whole lot of elements that you don't get to pick. God made you a part of his people in this time and place, in this city, where you live right now. And you know what? To be a Christian now and to walk with the Lord now is unique. And there's pros and cons, and there's unique challenges that are facing us that didn't face the church 100 years ago. There's challenges facing the church 100 years ago that aren't facing us now. And yet we go back and go, hey, we're family. This is it. We've been brought into this. We don't really get to pick. And it's mysterious. So God has entrusted you to your family and your family to you in a very intentional way. You're a part of the people of God, and that's not haphazard. And I really think that even if you're here this morning, just for a week of visiting, he's brought you to this group of the people of God, to this part of the family. You are family. He's brought you here for a reason. It's exciting. And as a church, if we're working well, like as a Little C Church Summit, if we're working well, our demeanor and heart is, man, how do we love and care for these family members been entrusted to us at the same level that two new parents would care and love for a child and seek to develop them and seek to see them grow and change. Family is your source of life. It's the origin of life. I mean, I don't need to speak in biological terms to you, but humans come into existence, right? You know, God is a grantor and giver of life, and he chooses to work normally through these two human agents as participants. We're procreators. Every one of us came into existence through these two elements, right? And so your family is really an origin of life, and God is the origin, the ultimate origin of all life, and he's the origin of our life. And so that's part of what binds us together. When you say you're called the family of God, it's like, you know what? I've been born again. I've been brought to life. And the agent, the factor that did that, the person, the Trinity, God, the Godhead, three in one God, three persons, working collectively, have created and brought into existence each of us as God's children. And so we share that common source of life. That's why it is not simply metaphorical to say that we're brothers and sisters. It's literal, right? We're being made new creations. Galatians 2:20, I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. 2 Corinthians 5:17, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has gone, and the new has come, right? Like Ephesians 2:10, we are God's workmanship, a poem being written by Christ Jesus to carry out and do good works that we might walk in them, right? The scriptures show us this picture. Romans 6, if we have been united with Christ, we've been united with Christ into his death and burial. So through baptism, baptism is a symbolic linking of Christ in his death, burial, and resurrection. And Romans 6 says, the ultimate goal is so that we might walk in a newness of life. In John chapter 3, Jesus looks at Nicodemus and says, if you want to come into the kingdom, you have to be born again. And he's like, I'll crawl back in my mom. He's like, God, no, you got to be born of water and born of the Spirit. Okay, well, how do I make that happen? Well, the Spirit is mysterious and it blows and works the way it works. Right? And so you need to be born again. To be a part of the family of God is to be born again. And we recognize that our source of life, we have a common source of life. The same one who's brought me to life has brought you to life and brought the person next to you to life. And then on top of that, the same Spirit that's in you is in the person next to you. So 1 Corinthians 2 says, who can know the mind of a person except for their spirit? And God has given you his Spirit. He's entrusted you with the mind of Christ. The Spirit of the Lord is in you, and it binds us together. And I would propose that that's not just a theoretical sort of feel-good notion, but that somehow there is a legitimate, actual, mysterious bond that takes place between the people of God because God's Spirit is simultaneously dwelling within us. That's why we're called the temple of God. That's why Ephesians 2 says we were being made a fit dwelling place for the Lord. That's why John 14:23, Jesus says, the Father and I will make our home in you. Whoever has my commands and obeys them, he's the one who loves me. He who loves me will be loved by the Father. I too will love him, show myself to him, and we will come and make our dwelling place, our home within that person. Like, that's what's wild and mysterious is the Spirit dwelling in us draws us all together. It's crazy. So not only is it not only is a family a source of life, the origin of this new life, but it's the place that you grow. Okay, how many of you guys seen Jungle Book? Better wrap up. Jungle Book, you know, like the cartoon or the live action. I'm a fan of the live-action Jungle Book. That was pretty good. Anybody, how many of you saw the live-action Jungle Book? Oh, that was pretty good, right? You know, I'm a sucker for Baloo and the cartoon one. Look for the bear necessities. He scratches back on that tree. The prickly pear. Ba-ba-dip-ba-doo. Yeah, I mean, I love that guy, right? So we're not Mowgli. Like, God did not bring you to life and then, like, leave you like some baby abandoned in a jungle to be raised by the elements. You've not been left and abandoned to be raised by wolves, right? You're not feral children, right? Not only is a family the origin of life, but the family is the right place where you are raised up. God didn't birth you in a new life and then take you like a baby and put you in the jungle like Mowgli to be raised by a bear and a panther. He brought you into a family. And the family of God is a place where you were raised up like a baby. And when you're an infant, you need a lot of care and you need a lot of oversight. And when you're 10 years old, you can do more than you could when you were an infant. And when you're 16, you're capable. And when you're 18, you stab your parents in the heart and you leave to college this week and then have a whole lot of fun and then leave a gaping hole so your father cries for 3 days straight. That's my life right now. My Emma went off to college. I'm like, oh, you know. It was brutal. It was absolutely brutal. I feel like someone punched me right in my guts for 3 days. And she's having so much fun. Oh, it's so great. Oh, you know. And I'm like, this is what's right for her. Like, so like the family is the right place to be raised up. The family is the right place when you're mature enough to be sent from. Right? Think about that. So this is our place. This is a family of God. In John 1 verses 12 through 13, I think this is part of one of the verses I want you guys to look at. John 1, 12 through 13. But to all who did receive him, that is Jesus, all those who believed in his name, that's Jesus, he has given the right to become children of God. And this sort of process, what does it say? It says he gave them the right to become children of God who were born not of blood, wasn't a natural thing, nor of the will of the flesh, it wasn't anything they picked, or the will of any human, it's not a human construct, but purely by the will of God. God says, man, I love you, I care about you, I'm gonna bring you to life, I'm gonna give you newness of life, and I'm gonna insert you into this family. And this family is gonna be a place where you share a common source of life, the same Spirit's gonna be in all of you, and you're gonna help raise one another up. I'm not leaving you like a feral child in the woods. You're not Mowgli. And so we become this place where we mourn with those who mourn. We rejoice with those who rejoice. We take seriously the responsibility. The two most powerful places of stability, sociologically speaking, the two most powerful places of stability that we have are family and the church, which is why tyrants and despots, I'm not getting political, don't worry, but which is why tyrants and despots will always try to deconstruct the family and deconstruct the church in an effort to control and rule and manipulate power over people. Look at thousands of years of human history. But the family and the church have historically been places of stability where people are supported, where they're encouraged, where they have people who cry with them when they're crying, who have people who rejoice with them when they're rejoicing, who have people that help when they're in needs and they use their gifts to help them, where there's seasons of you being brought up like a child and there's seasons where you're the parent. Almost done. So like, I remember when our first daughter, the same daughter I sent to college, I remember when she was born, and then after 3 days in the hospital, the nurse is like, okay, you guys are going to check out today. I'm like, dude, awesome, all right. You know, so then give us this baby, and we got a brand new, whatever that thing, baby carrier, what, you know, wrecking ball, whatever. You put the kid in it, little seat with the handle, right? And has a convertible top, so when they're sleeping, the bassinet, I don't know, and I have four kids, I still don't know. And so they're like, I got this thing, and I'm holding this baby in my hand, and the nurse is like, all right, you're good. And I'm like, well, I mean, now what? And they're like, no, you go home. And I'm like, you're just sending me out of here with this baby? Who comes to our house and checks on us and stuff? Nobody. I remember walking across that parking lot, and I was like, oh my goodness. I get in the car, you know, put Emma in the car, and we get in there, and I'm like, I can't believe they're letting us leave with this baby. And Olivia's like, we're the mom and dad now. And I'm like, well, you know, like, what? We're the mom and dad? And then I pull out of the driveway and out of the parking lot, and I'm like, why are these people driving so fast? You know, and I look down, and it's like 15 miles per hour. I'm going 15. Don't they know there's a baby in here? We need that yellow sign, baby on board. These people are crazy. I mean, dude, right? There is a time where you go from being the kid that's raised to being the parent. Like, people in the church need to realize that, right? And then sometimes the church might look at you and go, hey, you need to take care of this person. I'm going to entrust you with this person. That's called mentoring and discipleship in Christian-y words, right? But why don't we just look at it this way? Hey, you've been here a long time. You've been raised up in the family. Now it's time for us to hand you a baby, and you got to raise it. You got to disciple this person. You're going to be a part of growing them up in faith. And you're like, no, I like just listening on Sundays when I come and sit. I don't want to have to actually have the responsibility, right? And it's nerve-wracking. The idea of discipling someone or mentoring somebody can be totally nerve-wracking. Just as scary as when they go, here's your baby, check out. And you're like, I can't believe you're letting me do this. I'm like, no, it's happening. This is real. Family gives us a sense of roles. 1 Timothy 5, 1 and 2. Do not rebuke an older man. You encourage him as you would your father. 1 Timothy 5, 1 and 2. Younger men you speak to as your brothers. Older women as mothers. Younger women as sisters in all purity. It helps us understand how we relate to each other. Right? You have a role to play in the body. Wherever you go, wherever God has you land, whatever community of faith you end up in, there are roles. Right? I'm simultaneously a son for my father and a father for my son. Maybe someday I'll be a grandfather. My father now is a grandfather for my son. He is my father. Those things, like, there's a progression, and it's ongoing. You have roles to play where you're being mentored and discipled. You have roles to play where you're discipling and mentoring. You have roles to play where you're not the father. You're almost like the grandfather, you know, in the church. There's different roles and different ways that you play, but like, this is how God chooses to tell us. I want you to understand this, how you work with each other. It's even deeper than that, though. Look at 1 Timothy 1, 2. Paul says, Timothy, you're my true child in the faith. Right? This is how God says you ought to be viewing one another. What was Paul so, why was Paul so vested in Timothy? Paul was raising the successor that he knew would carry the mantle of the ministry that God had entrusted to him. The people of God should be consistently investing in the generations that are coming, understanding that we are handing the baton of carrying the mission that Jesus Christ himself entrusted to us in Matthew 28. It's the family business. You got to, you ready to take over the family business? What? Yeah. I got to raise a, I'm investing in a successor, someone who will continue on with the work that our family has been doing. It's a continuation. It's handing the baton. As we mature and progress, we play different roles in this family. It's so wild. Romans 8, 12 through 17. For all who are led by the Spirit of God are sons and daughters of God. You did not receive the spirit of slavery, which is the song we sang, so that you might fall back into fear. You've received the spirit of adoption as sons and daughters. And so you can cry out rightfully, Abba, Father. The Spirit himself bears witness with our spirit woven together that we are truly and legitimately children of God. And if we are children, that means that we are heirs, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, provided we suffer with him in order that we may be glorified with him. Our work as a family of God is a carrying out and equipping of the family so that the family business and the family values and the family land moves on. So God's doing the kingdom of God, that's a family land. God says, I am unfolding my kingdom. And our values as a unit, it's the righteousness of God that he describes to us in his word. And the family business is the making of disciples, the being fishers of men. It's fascinating. One last idea. Our family shapes who we become, and we can't stop it. How many of you have found yourself, if you're young, this hasn't happened yet. Everybody else who's a little bit older, how many of you have found yourself, you do something, and you're like, oh, I'm becoming my dad, right? You say something. The other day, my son said something that my dad used to always say to me, and he goes, that's a papa-ism. That's what he told me. He's like, Papa says that all the time. I'm like, oh, I'm well aware. I heard it for a lot of years growing up when I was your age, right? You know, so there are ways where we, I know you don't like to hear this, but there are ways where we are destined to become like our moms and dads. Right? We get their good stuff, we get their bad stuff. And if you're like me, there's parts of you where you're like, I'm becoming my dad, and you try to fight against it. Dude, resistance is futile. You will. There are certain ways, right? If you've met my dad, he comes to Summit, he'll be here second service. And people are like, you and your dad, you look identical. And I'm always like, dang, that's what I look like? You know, I was like, I love my dad and all, but like, I was like, oh, hopefully I was looking a little bit better than that, you know? I thought I was holding out, you know, holding strong. And, you know, I was like, guess not. 43's been rough on me if I look just like that. But, and guess what? My grandfather, my dad looks just identical to my grandfather. I'd be like, Dad, you look identical to Grandpa. When Grandpa was 60 and you're 60, you look the same. I bet you're going to look like him when he's 80. You know, we look the same. There's this part. But guess what? You are in the family of God, and there is a process where you are being made into the image and likeness of your father that you can't stop, and that's actually good news when you think of it this way. He who began the work in you is faithful to complete it. The fact that you are a family bodes well for you because you can say to yourself, Lord, I am thankful that as I grow and as I mature and as I walk through life, the same way that there are inescapable ways that I carry out this sort of becoming of my parents, not wholeheartedly, you understand what I'm saying, but this mimicking of my parents that seems inescapable, that's the same for you. You're going to make me like you. John 3, 1 through 24 is really the passage, but let me just read the section. See what kind of love the Father has given to us, that we should be called his children. And so we are. The reason why the world doesn't know us is that it didn't know him. But beloved, we are God's children now. We're not like God's children. We're not like, it's sort of similar to, or let me, no, like you are God's children now. But here's the interesting part. And what we will be has not yet appeared. But we know that when he appears, we shall what? We shall be like him. Because we shall see him as he is. John 3, 1 through 24 tells us, don't worry. Being part of the family means that as you grow, you will grow more and more into the likeness of your father. And he is a good father. And he is making you like him. And you might cringe at the ways you become like your earthly parents. And you also will celebrate the ways you mimic the good things about your earthly parents. right? The things you said, I'm never going to do that, and you find yourself doing them. With God, it's only good things. And he goes, don't worry. And you might be frustrated. Why aren't I more like you? I'm frustrated. And the Lord's like, I'm working in you, man. Don't worry. You're going to be like me. So here's our application. How do we do this? Right? It's not rocket science. This is an unpopular opinion, but sometimes family life, the strongest family life, is built through a series of very everyday normal things. Families eat together. Y'all should share meals together. Eat together. You're like, what? No, I'm not like, oh, eat spiritual bread together. No, you can eat actual food. It's okay. Sit down and eat real food in a real place, drinking real coffee, laughing, and with a real piece of spinach covering your front tooth, and then they don't tell you, and then they laugh at you for a while until they finally say, hey, you look like you're toothless. Whatever, right? Like, share some meals with each other. And the church has abandoned some of that, right? Because it's old-fashioned, it's lame. You know, the Wednesday night potluck is antiquated. I don't know, maybe it's not. What kind of family unit would you have if you never ate a meal together, ever? And the only thing you did was gather together for an hour to sing some songs and listen to some dude teach you. That'd be a pretty dumpy family. Wouldn't be that fun, would it? No, eat a meal together. Go out, have some food, invite someone to your house. Play some games together. Well, that's not spiritual. Well, it kind of is. Talk about the Bible, pray, serve, give, do all the other Christian-y stuff. But you know what? Also, like, you're the family of God. Be a family. Play a game. Laugh. Have some fun. It's all right. Celebrate birthdays with each other. Know when someone's birthday is in the family of God. In your community group, meet someone. Hey, when's your birthday? Put it on your calendar. Surprise them with the call that day. Oh, I got a call from my mom, and I got a call from this dude at church. And he said, happy birthday to me. That's pretty good. It's normal. What about this one? Report cards. I was thinking about this. Family life, when you're a kid, report card. That doesn't seem very popular in the church setting, but like, what if we had like a proverbial report card? We call that accountability. How are you doing? What's going on? What if you looked at somebody and said, hey, I will let you give me a grade in some stuff. And they're like, what? Yeah. Watch me for the next month. Here's some things I want to grow in. Peace, patience, kindness, goodness, self-control, long-suffering, fruits of the Spirit. Maybe that's an example. And we hang out, right? We work together. We hang out. At the end of this month, can you give me a grade for these things? Oh, man, talk about making yourself vulnerable. You're like, well, Josh, you have an F for patience. I'm like, I know. And you're kind of sarcastic and mean. Dang it, dude. I gave you a D for that. You know, you got an A for this. And A for, like, I'm not implementing and saying we should have some legalistic report cards, but like a report card's part of family life. How am I doing, Dad? How am I doing, Mom? Be encouraging to each other. You're a parent. When your kids do good things, you love them. Like, be kind to one another. Hey, I love when you did this. I saw you did this. Encourage me. I see the Spirit working in you. You know? And I think in some ways the church has given this up. Don't hear this wrong, and this isn't Summit specific, right? But I'm not paid by the church, so then I can just say things. It's not Summit specific. But sometimes I feel a little bit like if the church is a family, it would be as if the parents looked at the kids and said, hey, you organize your whole life yourself. You make your own dinners. You play your own games. You know, you go visit each other in the hospital when you're sick. Like, there is a healthy distribution of the work of the church into the people of the church. I'm not criticizing that. But I also want to push a little bit back against the way where the church has become in vogue to go, well, we don't plan anything. We don't do anything, you know, because the people of God do it. And I'm like, well, that makes sense if they're mature. But if I came as a parent in charge of my four kids and I looked at my four kids and said, you guys plan all your own stuff and you guys visit each other in your own hospital. I'm not going to come visit you in the hospital, but don't worry. Your brother will visit you. And I'm like, that's nice, but like, right? If it's true that the familial image has fathers, mothers, older sisters, older brothers, younger sisters, younger brothers, then it has to emanate into the whole. And I think the church maybe could do some things. Eat some meals together. Hang out. Have some potlucks. I don't care. Or plan some stuff. We're not social planners. I know, but like, do I think I'm a social planner if I plan an activity for me and my kids? Do I feel like I have, like, oh,
I have to be some cruise ship entertainer. I've never said that when I plan something for my kids because we're a family and they're my kids. I'm not asking the church to be some entertainment machine, but I'm asking the church to live like a family. That's my thing. Sorry. I didn't know I was that fired up about that idea. So I love you guys. I'm excited to be a family with you. Jesus is not ashamed to call us brothers and sisters. God is not ashamed to call us sons and daughters. And what if we as a church thought about this idea not just as an exercise of how we're going to relate to God, but we began to think of it as an exercise in how we also relate to one another. That's my challenge, and that's what I have to share with you guys. Well, church is done now. Let me give you the benediction. So you can stand up. This thing called the benediction, Aaron, God gives it to Aaron in Numbers, and it was a way where God said, hey, I want you to bless my people after you've gathered for worship. And so I'm just going to ask that you be willing to stand, if you can, if that's possible, and in a symbolic gesture, put your hands out, your palms facing up, receiving from the Lord the blessing gives to you. And then I say to you this morning, may the Lord bless you and may he keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and may you travel and go in God's peace as our service has ended. I'm proud to be in a family with you guys. We love you. Look forward to seeing you again. Thanks a lot.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. For more information about Summit Upstate and other available resources, check out our website at summitupstate.org.